This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
And Achim Melech questions a little bit, why are you on your own, why are you running like this? And David explains, he doesn't tell him the story, he just says, I'm on a mess, an urgent errand, and I haven't had time to take anything with me. Have you got bread? So Achim Melech gives him food. He then says, we're then told that there was present there, Doeg HaEdomi. Doeg HaEdomi was the Av Beis Din. He was the most senior person on the Beis Din of Sheol HaMelech. And a man of very, very superior intellect and a very big lamdan, but a mischief maker par excellence. And he's there in the Beis HaMedrash. He sees all this happening. Then David says to Achimelech, do you have a sword here? And Achimelech says, all I've got is the sword of Goliath, which you killed. That's the only sword I've got here. If you want to, you can take it, reluctantly. And he gives it to him. Finally, David says to him, will you ask of the Urim V'Tumim whether I'm going to be successful or not? And Achimelech asks. Urim V'Tumim was the special breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, which could be asked questions by the Kohen for a king, according to some of the poskim of that time, or for communal needs, not for private needs. And he asks Achimelech, don't forget David has already been anointed. The public don't know that, but David knows it. And Achimelech, on behalf of David, poses certain questions to the Urim V'Tumim. Later on, Shaul accuses some of his close ministers for not being loyal to him, in not revealing to him that David and Shaul's son Yehonatan are not loyal to him. Vaya'an Doeg HaEdomi. So in chapter 22, we're told that Doeg HaEdomi, the Av Beis Din, gets up. Now you must picture Doeg HaEdomi. Doeg HaEdomi, as we said, no ordinary person. A man of very big stature. Very serious sort of man. A very, very big Talmid Chacham. To be appointed Av Beis Din in those days, I've always said, it's not like being appointed Av Beis Din today. He had to be superior to anybody else in learning at that time. And superior to anybody else then doesn't mean like it means today. The people he was competing with were of unbelievable intellectual stature and with endless knowledge. And he was elected as the superior one. And he says, Ro'isi I saw, as Ben Yishai ba Nove, I saw Ben Yishai come to Nov, El Achimelech ben Achituv, he came to Achimelech. Va Yishal loy ba Hashem, and he asked on behalf of David the Urim V'Tumim, but Seda Nosan loy, and he gave him food, and he gave him the sword of Goliath. The result of that sentence is that Shaul decides that Achimelech and the city of Nob are also traitors. At this stage, Shaul believes that David's intentions are undermining and that David's intentions are negative, and he feels that in order to save his crown and to save the nation, David has to be annihilated and anybody who's supporting him. The story of Doeg HaEdomi means that Achimelech has to be wiped out as well. He in fact calls Achimelech, questions him, doesn't accept his answers, and instructs Doeg HaEdomi to wipe out the city. And Doeg HaEdomi goes and he wipes out every single Kohen. This is the Av Beis Din. He wipes out Achimelech, he wipes out Achimelech's family, he wipes out every Kohen in the city. Only one Kohen escaped. That was one of the sons of Achimelech managed to get away and to run to David. And this is always brought as an example of the destructiveness of Lashon Hara. If Doeg HaEdomi would just have kept quiet, it would never have happened. And this is the real fall of Shaul. Everything starts to deteriorate and to become chaotic from this point. This is inexcusable. And who's held responsible for it? Doeg. Now what did Doeg do so badly? The king is asking for facts. He's the Av Beis Din. He's a loyal servant of Shaul HaMelech. And he reports facts. Is there a single distortion in what Doeg says? He says, I saw David come to Nov. True. I saw him come to Achimelech. True. He asked the Urim V'Tumim on his behalf. True. He gave him food. True. And he gave him the sword of Goliath. True. What's the terrible avail? And we can still see stoic is and he's saying to Shaul, you know, Shaul, I don't like to come and tell stories or make mischief, Shaul HaMelech, but once you've asked me for facts, I am an Avbezdin, you know, and I only deal in facts. No interpretations, Shaul, and I'm not involved emotionally in this little dispute between you and David that you two must sort out. It has nothing to do with me. But out of loyalty to you, I believe it is my function to report to you the facts. But please, Shaul, don't ask me for interpretations. Only the facts. Let's deal with facts here. He came to Nov, he saw Ahimelech, he got the food, he got the sword, he asked Hashem. That's all, nothing else. What's wrong with it? And look at the distraction that comes from the reporting of facts. Is that Lashon Hara? Where's Lashon Hara here? What's he saying nasty about anybody? And is it so wrong to help a man who's running and who's hungry, who doesn't have anything to eat? The answer is that when you're dealing with people, if you're going to deal with facts only, you're going to distort. Because people aren't facts only. People weren't born yesterday. Facts need interpretation. They need to speak. And the way they need to speak is to make sure that one understands the context in which those facts are performed. And if one doesn't understand the context of those facts, the facts are immediately distorted without having to distort at all. It is the most beautiful way of destruction, and it is the most beautiful way of talking Lashon Hara, to simply talk facts only. There is nothing more destructive than to talk facts only. Nothing more annihilating when you're dealing with people than to talk facts only. I deal with facts only. I walked into so-and-so's house and I saw him beating his child. Facts. That's all. Why? Why was he beating his child? But I'm not involved in the family problems and emotions. I'm just involved in facts. He was beating his child. Terrible thing. It's a fact. There's nothing more destructive than the reporting of a fact alone, without the background and without checking the background when dealing with human beings. That's the essence of Lashon Hara. There's one lie Doeg tells here. He simply has reversed the order. That's all. And the reversing of the order is so critical. He doesn't regard it as a lie, because what difference does it make when you're dealing with facts in what order you list them? Each one is a fact on its own. Each one is serious on its own. Does it matter if A came before B or B came before C? It's not important. When you're dealing with a human being with a conscious, with a conscience and with a consciousness, when you're dealing with a human being who is doing things intentionally and with an intention, and he's doing things in a particular order, then the order becomes critical. And another beautiful way of Lashon Hara is simply report the facts, but turn around the order a little bit. That's equally destructive. If you want to go further with the example that I gave, I walked into his house and I saw him beating his child. That's one way of saying it. The other way you can say it is, I walked into his house and I saw him beating his child. And his child was misbehaving later on. Secondly, if I would have report it the other way around, it would make sense. His child was misbehaving, so he was beating his child. Then I say, oh, very good father. But if you report it the other way around, he was beating his child and then his child was misbehaving, you'll say, of course his child was misbehaving. What do you expect of a child whose father beats him? Same thing, reporting two facts. I've simply reversed the order. And I've turned something constructive into something violent and into something negative and into something completely destructive by reporting the facts in an inverse order. That's all. It's true that David came to Nov. It's not true that he came to Ahimelech. He came to the Beis HaMedrash. How do we know that? Because Doeg was sitting in the Beis HaMedrash and saw all that. So where did David go? He didn't go to Ahimelech's house. Now if David was trying to do something underhand, where would he have gone? To the Beis HaMedrash, where even Doeg was sitting? Or would he have gone to the house and said, please call Ahimelech, I've got to speak to him? That Doeg doesn't tell the show. That piece of information he doesn't divulge. And here's the third beautiful way of, while sticking to facts, annihilating and destroying with an evil tongue of Lashon Hara. Just leave out one or two. That's all. And what would have made a pattern and a picture becomes destructive and becomes negative. Just tell Shaul He came to the Beis HaMedrash in front of us all and spoke to Achimelech. Immediately Shaul would have known, I need to search for more facts, this doesn't make sense. A man who's plotting to overthrow me doesn't do it in public. But he doesn't tell him that. He came to Achimelech. And he asked from Urim V'Tumim, is that what he came for? That's not what he came for. He came because he was dying of hunger. That's a fact which Doeg doesn't say. It's not my business. I'm not a doctor to examine him and to find out if he's dying of hunger or not. I deal with facts. I saw Achimelech give him food. That's all. I saw Achimelech ask Urim V'Tumim on his behalf. Yes, but that was at the end. Not at the beginning. It wasn't that Achimelech didn't offer to do that. Achimelech reluctantly did it. Give a bit of support for Achimelech. Yes, Doeg deals with facts. But the facts don't tie up with a tzaddik like Achimelech. And if the facts don't tie up with a tzaddik like Achimelech, there's something that needs to be further examined. What was the intention of Achimelech is what's missing. What would Doeg answer if Shaul said, yes, Doeg, I hear the facts. What do you think Achimelech meant by all this? Doeg would have said, King Shaul, with respect, I am surprised at your majesty for even putting such a question to your Av Beis Din. Is it my business to analyze and to psychoanalyze the deep motivations of people? I've got to work on the facts. I don't know what Achimelech's intention was. You draw your own conclusions. That's what Doeg would have answered. You can't deal with facts independent of intentions. Because the facts can be inconsistent. The intentions, not necessarily. Let's go back to our same example. That a child comes running in crying to me, says, so-and-so beat me up. I should get very angry and go and find so-and-so and beat him up. What I need to say is, who is so-and-so? Then there are two possible answers. He can say, so-and-so is a stranger, I don't know him. Or he can say, he's my father. The next question has to be, why did he beat you up? So he'll say, because he hates me. Now I've got to stop. If a stranger in the street picked up this child and beat him up, and I say to the child, why did he beat you up? The child says, because he hates me. Is that feasible? Absolutely feasible. There might have been other reasons too. One has to go into it. But it's making sense. A stranger, the child never seen the man before, picks him up and beats him. Can be because he hates you. If the child answered, it was my father. I say, why did your father beat you up? He says, because he hates me. Which a child is quite likely to answer. And I've got to say, come, what do you mean? Yesterday your father was giving you a gift. Didn't your father give you presents yesterday? Yes. Last month he took you on holiday. Spent a lot of money. He took you on a holiday. Yes, true. He greets you with love every morning and kisses you goodnight every night. True? True. So what do you mean he hates you? It's not consistent. It doesn't make sense. So the child will say, yeah, but does kissing and smacking make sense? That he kisses me last night and smacks me today, does that make sense? The answer is actions can be inconsistent. Or let us say, actions can appear inconsistent until you know the reason. And there's nothing wrong in actions appearing inconsistent. And that's the power of the Baal Lashon Hara. To take actions which appear inconsistent, and all of our actions appear inconsistent, if you detach them from the intentions, and to work with the facts alone and expose the inconsistency. And the only way to deal with the Baal Lashon Hara is to say, now, why did he do it, that father? Why did he kill? Why did he hit the child? Hit the child because he hated him? That can't be. You can't have inconsistent intentions. That doesn't make sense. A human being is consistent in his intentions. He's not always consistent in his actions. It can be a mistake. You might answer, the father lost his temper. Good, okay, but not because he hates the child. We sometimes make mistakes. That doesn't mean that our intentions are inconsistent. You can have a person who's working L'shem Shemayim, and as we learned a little bit earlier, his Yetzer gets the hold of him, and he does something which he shouldn't have done. Does that mean that he's not an honest person? Does that mean that all the mitzvahs he's done are not valid? No. That means he made a mistake, once you know the intention. And very often, once you know the intention, the action is perfectly consistent. A father kissing a child 1 minute, and hitting the child 5 minutes later, and kissing the child again 5 minutes later, if you know that it's the father, and you know that the father loves and cares for the child, those three actions are perfectly consistent. There's nothing wrong with them. But you need to ask, why? And if you miss that question, why, if you only deal with the facts, and you're not prepared to become a bit of a psychologist, you're going to make a mess of it. There's no worse way to destroy people, or Or shall we say there's no better way than to destroy people, than to try and analyze the facts without analyzing the kavana. Why is he doing it? And it's in the kavana that inconsistencies can be picked up. And only in the kavana. There you'll find whether the person is being consistent or not. It's amazing how similar the story of this of the spies is to the story of Doeg HaEdomi, Lahavdil. They come back and they report facts. If you look at their report, there's nothing, there's no Lashon Hara. They were sent to report facts and they come back and they report facts. Bonu el horitz asher shalachtonu. We came to the land to which you sent us. V'gam zovas cholov udvashi v'zeh pirio. And it is truly a land flowing of milk and honey, and here is an example of its fruit. True, facts, beautiful. If this but, ki azon, the Gemara points out, by the way, in every bit of Lashon Hara, there will always be a but. Starts off nice. If the Lashon Hara doesn't start off nice, one turns off from the beginning. You say he's got a grudge against him, so you don't listen. So anyone who's got a bit of experience in Lashon Hara starts off nice. He's a very fine person, and he's very good. But at that point, you know the Lashon Hara is starting. So that's how they, and we learn that from here. That's the way it works. But the people are very powerful. True. The cities are fortified. True. They're good spies. They're bringing back the report they're meant to bring back. And we also saw descendants of giants there, big people. Amaleks in the south and the Chit in the Yebusi, they lay out the whole map for them. Then later on they say, the land in which we dwelt is a land that destroys its inhabitants. And all the people we saw there were people of Midos. Very different ways of interpreting that last statement. But what they're saying is, Chazal tell us that wherever they went, they saw funerals. People were dying all over the place. And they say, but the people we saw were Anshei Midas. They were all people that ate well, that slept well, that did things in good proportion. They were not extreme people. So we could not draw the conclusion that they were dying because they were unhealthy. They were all strong, healthy people. Why were they dying? Must be because there's something wrong with the land. That's the conclusion they drew. Very straight and logical reasoning. Go and fault it. They've proved right along that the people are healthy, they're eating well, they're fit, they're very strong, very secure, and yet they die. So something wrong. What's the truth, says the Gemara? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says Rashi, God also l'toiva, kedei litordom ba'evlom v'lo yitnu leiv le'elom. The Ribbono Shel Olam did a chesed, he did a kindness for them. That they should be so preoccupied burying their dead and mourning for the dead that they wouldn't notice the 12 spies. That's what the Ribbono Shel Olam did. Where did they go wrong? The spies are dealing with facts. They are men of facts, men of truth, men of science, men of mathematics. No emotions here. We've got to go and come back and tell you what we saw. This is what we saw. Healthy people dying. Now draw your own conclusions. Where did they go wrong? They just didn't ask one question. Why? Now to ask a why question, again, we come back to the principle of the tzedek tishpoit amisechel. When you're asking why, the why has to be asked in context with a man's background and the man's reputation. Otherwise it doesn't make any sense. Otherwise I can say what I like. Why is the father hitting the child? Because he hates the child. It's a good answer. Normally when people are aggressive to another one, it's because they hate them. It only doesn't make sense in the background of the fact that yesterday he kissed his child and a month ago he took him on holiday and that he educates his children and loves his children tremendously, as everybody can see. Then the why is inconsistent. But if you don't look at the chazaka of the man, if you don't look at his reputation, it doesn't help asking why. Why is that which will throw out the inconsistencies? That's where you can test whether you're going right or not. In life, when you're not dealing with human beings, but you're dealing with historic events, with political events, and you ask why, there needs to be a Ribbono Shel Olam in the picture, there needs to be a God in the picture. Otherwise, one's on shaky ground, you don't know why. Why? Why? There are all sorts of theories for why. But if you want a religious theory of why, if you want to really understand why, then you've got to realize, firstly, who does it? Who is it? The same as we asked the little kid who came and said, he hit me. And we say, the first question is, who hit you? We can't do anything until we know who it was. Was it your father? Was it a stranger? Was it your brother? Who was it? So when a historic event or a political event happens, or any event in one's life, and we ask why, before we've got to ask why, we've got to ask who did it. And the religious answer is God did it. That's where we start from. Now comes why. But we're dealing with a Ribbono Shel Olam. So when I'm spying out the land, and I see people dying all over the place, and they're healthy and fit, and they're eating well, and they're not diseased. So I've got to ask why, but before I ask why, I've got to ask who? Who's killing them? We don't see murderers, we don't see weapons, we don't see war, we don't see violence, we don't see disease. So who's killing them? God's killing them. Why? Then they would have reached the right conclusion. Why would God be killing people? Maybe to help us on our mission? And then they would have come back with the right answers. But they weren't prepared to ask why. They were only dealing with facts. And why gets on to deeper reasons, and why is none of my business, and why you must draw your own conclusions. I'm here to deal with facts. There is nothing more destructive, there is nothing more violent, there is nothing more shaking at the foundations than taking human situations and dealing with facts independent of motivations. It cannot be. Now we begin to understand. There is an issue to interpret a man's actions in a way which will lead to conclusions which are inconsistent with his reputation. That is the issue of the Tzedek Tishpoet Amitzech. You might be right. It's possible that he had bad intentions. It's possible that he's gone mad. It's possible that he is inconsistent in his intentions. But you do not have the right to draw that conclusion unless his chazaka changes, unless his reputation changes. You see, once, twice, three times, four times, it's, all of a sudden there's a complete different change, and he becomes a man who's generally disregards the law, then one has to start drawing different conclusions. But as long as he has a chazaka of a mensch, of a normal human being, one has to be sure that when one is interpreting the actions in terms of the why, that the why ties up with the who, and that the who ties up with the why. That those two questions are asked and answered parallelly and not dealt with separately. The Maharal paskins, the talking Lashon Hora in front of somebody else is not Lashon Hora if interpretation is unnecessary, if the facts are clear to everybody. But where interpretation is necessary, says Rabbi Yitzchak Kutner, even the Maharal will agree, as in the case of Miriam and Aaron talking in front of Moshe, according to the view of Rabbi Nosson, that even though they're talking in front of him, that is Lashon Hora. The issur is the misinterpretation of the facts, not only the reporting of them. The issur of the Meraglim, what did they do wrong? They went to a land to spy, they came back, they reported facts. Is that wrong? And even if you say they talked Lashon Hora, that was their job. And even if you say, well, even if it's your job, you're still not allowed to talk Lashon Hora, but they were talking about a land, they were talking about stones and wood. The answer is, if you understand according to the Yesod of Rabbi Yitzchak Kutner what the principle of Lashon Hora is, particularly the second kind of Lashon Hora, it is in the omitting to ask the why, in the omitting to understand the motivation, thus leading you to conclusions which are incorrect. If you understand that, you see what the other was. Not that they spoke about Eretz Yisrael. Does it hurt Eretz Yisrael? Does it bother anybody? Nobody cares about that. That's not what's important. But that they didn't take the thing through to its logical conclusion and find the motivation for what they saw. That they didn't understand the meaning. That they didn't tie the events up to he who controls the events to see that it all fits. That was the issue. And where did that issue start? They saw Miriam talking about Moshe. Why didn't they learn from that? Because they weren't asking why. That's why they didn't learn from that. They weren't questioning deeply enough. They were only dealing with facts. Miriam spoke against her brother and got punished. Facts. Good, but that was her brother. That was a human being. We're talking about a land. That's not why Miriam was punished. She wasn't talking against her brother. She was trying to make peace in her brother's home. She was worried and concerned about her brother. See the facts correctly. Ask why. So why was she talking? Only to make peace. In that case, why was she punished? Now that becomes a major question. So I've answered Miriam. Miriam's a tzaddik, it can't be that she's talking Lashon Hara. Aaron's a tzaddik, can't be he's talking Lashon Hara. And Achinam, he's not talking Lashon Hara. They're trying to solve a family problem. So why is she punished? Now there's something wrong. Now God's a kasha. Now I have a question on God, because the way I've interpreted the events doesn't explain God in his mercy and kindness and understanding. Well, so I've got to go a little bit deeper. And I've got to find that what was wrong was not her intentions. Miriam's intentions were good. What was her wrong was her analysis of Moshe. Because although on the facts it looked good, it didn't tie up with the man. It, on the surface, it appears that there was no other interpretation. The way she interpreted seemed right and correct, and Aaron agreed with it. But it doesn't tie up with the man. That's not Moshe. And therefore you have no right to draw such conclusions and to pass them on. And if the Meraglim would have learnt that, they would have realized that when they go on their spying mission, they've got to question not only what and not how, but why. Why do we see what we see? Why is this happening? And who's doing it? And when we've answered that why and we've answered that who, we've got to make sure that the why and the who answers tie together and they make sense. That it's feasible and possible, that why to that who. If it's God who's doing it, the reason we give must be feasible to God. If it's they who are doing it, the reason we give must be in accordance with their reputation, with their characters. But to answer the why question in a way which is inconsistent with the how or with the who or vice versa, or worse still, not to ask who and not to ask why, that's Chas V'Shalom. One of the first things that any Rav does, if you, a person, will come to me and say they heard from a certain rabbi, A, B, C, and it sounds shocking, the first thing I'll say is, who was the rabbi? And on the basis of the answer that they'll tell me, I will say, you heard wrong. It's just not possible. I know the man, and I can hear what you're saying, and I know that what you're saying couldn't have come out of the mouth of that man. Finished. And it's not just with rabbis, it's with individuals too. We don't like doing that. We like making mischief rather. Ooh, you hear what he said? That's much more exciting that way. But Lamai said, the Lashon Hara can be killed at its bottom level. If when you hear what so-and-so said about so-and-so or what so-and-so did, if you simply put the things together and say, now why would he have done it? Let me try and figure out. And who was it who did it? And I understand him. And now that according to what you're telling me, this seems to be the motivation, but it doesn't tie up. Such a man, it doesn't make sense. I know him and he wouldn't do a thing for that reason. I'm not questioning the actions. Actions can be distorted. Actions can be inconsistent. But when I look at the motivation for the action, it doesn't make sense. You peel the Lashon Hara at the source. You say, I don't believe you. That's all. You've made a mistake. You heard incorrectly. You saw incorrectly. You didn't understand. But it's not possible. Because I know who we're dealing with. If the Meraglim would have understood that principle from Miriam, if they would have understood this longness in Miriam, if they would have stopped to question the deep yisod, why did... She's a tzaddikah, so she can't be talking Lashon Hara. If she wasn't talking Lashon Hara, why did God punish her? The answer is because of the misjudgment. They would have been a lot more careful. And here we see how God and Moshe Rabbeinu foresaw the inevitable fall of the miracle. As we discussed last night, and it all ties together now. The need to send spies into Canaan meant a feeling of insecurity. Why are you feeling insecure when Kriyas Yamsuf occurred just a few weeks ago? Rachav Azoyna hears about Kriyas Yamsuf and she's convinced the Jews are winning. You were there and you're not convinced the Jews are winning. You need to send spies. Why? Very simple. You didn't ask who and you didn't ask why. You saw Kriyas Yamsuf. Wonderful. You're emotionally lifted to a height. Spiritually lifted to a height. Wonderful. Matan Torah afterwards. Then you come down to reality. Did you sit down and say, who split the Red Sea? The answer is God. It was a miracle. The Ribbono Shel did it. Next question, why? Answer is to save us. To save us for what? To save us to kill us in the desert? Is that why he did it? Does that make sense with God? If we were dealing with Satan, it makes sense. He saved us there to kill us there just to play games with us. But you admit that it was God who split the sea and not the Sultan. So why did he split the sea? Not to kill you in the desert. He split the sea to give you Eretz Yisrael. That's why he did it. So what are you questioning? Send spies in to see whether you'll manage or not. They just didn't take the reasoning far enough. As far as we're able with our little minds to try and understand what went wrong. We need to try and understand what went wrong in some way or another. And I'm exaggerating it, I'm making it much bigger, it was finer things than these, but it was along these lines. That the thought process of the why and the who didn't go far enough right from the beginning. It didn't go far enough in Kriyas Yamsuf, it didn't go far enough at the Mon, it didn't go far enough at Matan Torah, it didn't go far enough with Miriam. Who punished her and why? And consequently it wasn't going to go far enough on their spying mission. So it would come back with the facts. But Bechayechem, as the Ribbono Shel Olam says to them, by their lives, I'm going to give them a place to make a mistake. It's going to be inevitable that they're going to make a mistake if they're not asking why. And they're not asking who, which is clear that they're not asking, because if they were asking these questions, they wouldn't have had to send spies. The fact that they need to send spies shows that they're not thinking to the end. They're going to see the facts. They'll see a wonderful country. And they're going to distort those facts because they're not asking why. And that's how it's going to be. It's inevitable. And Moshe Rabbeinu sees that too. And yet he has to send them. You can't teach a person to ask why and how. If a person doesn't have that in him, if he hasn't been educated over years, you can't. He wants to send spies, you've got to send the spies. If Moshe Rabbeinu would have said, no, you can't send the spies, they would have said, how? You're scared. You're scared, we'll see what's really there. So he's forced into a situation, and God, so to say, is forced into a situation to allowing the spies to go. And Moshe Rabbeinu knows they're going to fall, and he prays to the Ribbono Shel Olam, God, save Yehoshua, that's all. Just keep Yehoshua out of it. Let him see it right. Let him interpret it right. Yeshua is a Talmud of Moshe. Yeshua has learned to ask why. But even he, Moshe Rabbeinu, is worried that with the influence of his 10 friends, he's going to be affected in his way of perceiving things. Even though Yeshua has said, you know what a Talmud Yeshua was? The first in the Beis HaMidrash, early in the morning, before Moshe Rabbeinu came, he was there, the last to go out, sitting at Moshe Rabbeinu's feet, day in, day out. The man who ultimately succeeds Moshe Rabbeinu because he has Moshe Rabbeinu's Torah. Moshe is worried that in 40 days, all that Torah can be lost by being exclusively in the company of 10 people who don't know how to think straight. 10 people whose thinking ability doesn't go right to the end. Chas v'shalom, we should say, they don't know how to think straight. Halavai, we should know how to think how these great people thought. But in the sense that we're discussing, their inability, so to say, to think right till the end of the why and the how. Moshe was worried, and Moshe knew that despite all the learning of Yehoshua, 40 days in these people's company and that Torah is gone, unless the Siyata Dishmai, unless there's help from the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the reason for that is very simple. It's hard, hard work. To think is so hard. To think honestly, to think a thing through to the bottom, to throw up an inconsistency and find that you've been wrong all the time, is so hard. And to work on it again until you're able to resolve the inconsistency. It's much easier to give up halfway. And one tends to take the line of least resistance. And when you find yourself in the company of people who think a tenth of the way, or half the way, or three quarters of the way, that becomes the normal acceptable way to think. And one doesn't notice how distorted one is becoming in the process. How careful we have to be. How honest we have to be with ourselves. How brutal we have to be with ourselves. To make sure that we don't fall into that same trap. Facts lie. Statistics are meaningless in this sense. We're not interested in facts. We're interested in checking out the reason for the facts, the motivation behind the facts. Because there we'll find out whether we're thinking honestly or not. And then we can come back and look at the facts. Now next week, in Yetzer Hashem, we'll look at the coin on exactly the obverse side. Sometimes intentions are not enough. It's the facts that are important. And at the end of that, we should find the balance of how to judge a situation and how to look. But the first stage is, from the facts back to the who, from the who to the why, and to make sure that who and why tie up. And if they don't, you've misunderstood the whole thing, you don't understand. And have you done kol adam lekaf tzchus? Rather judge him lekaf tzchus than chas v'shalom make a mistake and give an interpretation which goes against the very essence of whom the man is.